the historical mind understands things in perspective and in terms of their connections. We have decided that George's mind is the historical mind. and he doesn't really need an introduction here. But because there are many visitors this morning to this forum, I would just like to say a couple of things briefly about the nature of this forum. This is the University of Human Unity Forum. And we have been meeting here for presentations and discussions since September. Our objective has been to explore the possibility of discovering a paradigm of integral learning. An integral learning paradigm. That has been our research objective. So we are en route to that discovery. Might be able to unplug the little fire. You can visit the website universityofhumanunity.org and find there recorded presentations and discussions, probably now about 30 hours or so, from basically six major perspectives based upon a Vedic paradigm of knowledge and existence. And so we have had presentations in the area of linguistics, consciousness of speech, art, consciousness of harmony, psychology, consciousness of self, philosophy, consciousness of the mind, sociology, consciousness of relations, social relations, and science, consciousness of energy and matter. So that's our exploration as a basis for developing the platform of learning that this experiment in higher education wishes to pursue. So at this point along the way, George has joined us to provide the sociological or historical or social perspective on consciousness of the human in its relations, in its development, from that particular perspective, which could also be studied, of course, from the philosophical or the psychological or the linguistic perspectives. So we would like to keep in mind that different individuals in the history of the evolution of society and consciousness have developed these distinct approaches to understanding our existence. The human being and its world have been understood characteristically from distinctly different perspectives. And these perspectives correspond to structures of reality, and they have become quite distinct and separate disciplines. So to integrate all of those ways of understanding us and things could lead us beyond the mental structures into a higher mind and more universal and intuitive grasp of our whole being. So this University of Human Unity Forum isn't just an academic exercise. We are deliberately pursuing a pathway beyond those conventional structures into a more integral way of knowing and being. We hope that these sessions continue in perpetuity and diversify as we go along. So, George, thank you very much for bringing us your perspective.
Thank you. I would like to go on in perpetuity, but I'm already far advanced on the normal way of life. And in fact, what I am going to tell you, or try to tell you today, is something I have studied for a couple of years, and I intend one day, if the time is given, to write a book about it. Why am I saying that? Because when I am talking here, I am just spouting names and dates and all that, and everything may seem quite irrelevant in some way, in another way, just my opinion. I don't mean to say that this is the opinion, but it is an opinion that has been checked with many partners, and these partners are the authors one reads. I say that because we are touching here on things that concern everybody intimately. And everybody, Westerners and Easterners, and so many here are Westerners today, has some history in life that is connected with it. This means some associations and all that. So it is a kind of founded opinion here which I am ready to put, when I ever write a book, in front of everybody who ever reads it. And what is it? It is God within, God without. One of the great subjects, God here, or you have to come via us to go to God there. These are the differences, is the difference between the search within and the religions, the churches, the dogmatic ways prescribed to go to God via an institution. It is fundamental. At the moment, for instance, there is a big discussion going on between atheists and religionists and intelligence design people. And when you read this, and I'm going to talk, we intend to talk about it in 2 weeks, when you read this, everything is a big boxing match in the ring of Western civilization. And what is Western civilization? The God is there, above the roof, or above the clouds, in his night dress, a long beard, you know, that is the Judeo-Christian God. The whole discussion goes about that, and I assure you, I am quite well read in this thing. There is never any awareness that there is another kind of God which is completely different and which is the way of approaching something that we have in us and that we can become. So what I want to do for that is science, religion and the unknown God. This is my working title. So I try to talk a little about that in a couple of weeks. Now we have this fundamental difference, God within, God without. Where is it coming from? Well, I'm going to make a drawing. You have Anatolia, Turkey today, and then here there is Palestine, and then here there is Africa, Sinai, the Nile, with all its branches, the Delta. Here you have Asia, here you have the Black Sea, here you have Greece, about which we have been talking last time so much. But this is a kind of continuation of the talk of last week, but I hope you won't miss anything if you have not been there. So, this world, the Eastern Mediterranean, after the conquest of Alexander, became the Hellenistic world. And it is very important to see that there is a Hellenistic world with its origins in Greece. Alexander was a Macedonian. They conquered Greece in the Battle of Chaeronea, and then he went on to conquer this whole huge, vast expanse up to India, up to a little farther the other side of India. When he died in 323, of course this fell apart, because this was a matter of 10 years in which he has conquered this incredible vast expanse, and after his death, it fell apart. Here you have the reign of the Seleucids. Here you have the reign of the Ptolemies. Here you have the reign of the Attalids. Here you have the reign of the Antonids, which were the original Macedonians. They are called the Diadochs. And he fell apart and stayed for a long time under these people, under these dynasties. Don't forget that here the Ptolemies, with their capital, with their capital in Alexandria, that they were the dynasty of Cleopatra. And there we are at the time around, I have written 1-1 because there is no year zero. The year zero doesn't exist. It went up to 1 and then it started again at 1. So let's try to make it clear again, the year zero. So Cleopatra was the mistress, the lover of Caesar and Antony. We are very close to that. Cleopatra was pure Greek. She was a very intelligent woman who spoke many languages, and she had her castle, which has been rediscovered here on an island of Alexandria. And this Alexandria is the main city in this whole geographical area. Because in Alexandria, three important cultures came together. Hellenism is syncretism. Syncretism means many things together, from everywhere. But how could I come together? Because they had one language, Greek. Even the Romans spoke Greek when they were there in this, when they wanted to behave culturally, they spoke Greek. When they were fighting, they spoke Latin. So, Greek became the lingua franca, which is a little ironical to say that in Latin. It became the koine. And this is the reason that all that could happen, because it had that language to carry it. The language is always an expression of a culture. And that culture is, of course, everything that had been forced with so much exaltation and suffering in ancient Greece. This was spreading everywhere. There were great cities. There was Jerusalem, there was Antioch, there was Tarsus. Oh my God, Vladimir, I'm going to have trouble with this. There was Tarsus, there was Pergamum, there was Ephesus, there was Athens, Corinth, there were great cities everywhere. And they had these splendors of which now we still see the pillars standing up, you know, the remains. But they must have been wonderful to look at in a way we cannot imagine. So this Greek culture was everywhere. among the Jews, among the Egyptians, among the Syrians, among the Lydians, all these different people, Greece, Hellenism. And then, of course, after the conquest of the Romans, much of this Greek culture was doubled up by the Roman interpretation. And the Greek gods had also then a Latin name. Aphrodite became Venus, Zeus became Jupiter, and so on and so on. And just like now, actually it is in India that one can understand the spirit of these times. Because here so much is still alive from the past. And if you want to see how a temple is working, they are still alive, Madurai, Tirumalai, everywhere, all these great temples, you know, Puri of course in the north and so many more. You see how a temple is living, how the god is being served, how he is being dressed, how the water then is used for sanctifying oneself, running into a cooler. That is still there. And why I'm saying that is that every temple has his god. The Shiva of Chidambaram is not the Shiva of Puri, although it is one Shiva, but it is our Shiva. So here, all these gods had their temples, and the one was Jupiter Capitolinus, because the emperor had become a god and they had to all these honors to gain from the emperor. Then you had Zeus, this one, and you had Aphrodite, that one. Just like here you have Durga, this one, that one, and all this, which of course is one god in many aspects. So that is Hellenism spreading everywhere, and that is the background against which we are putting our story of today. The culture brings with it the philosophy. And I have told you last time how so many philosophies, the classical philosophies, all came from Socrates. From him came, of course, Plato. Aristotle was a disciple of Plato, which is often forgotten. 20 years he had been a disciple of Plato at the academy. Then, here from Socrates came the Cynics. From Socrates came the Stoics. From Socrates came, in fact, then, via Plato, Neoplatonism, and so on. Cynics, why? Because Socrates was an ascetic. In a way, he was married, he had children. He didn't look after his wife. Xanthippe is the model of the scolding housewife, but she must have had a reason. Because this fellow, her husband, he was always running in the streets and talking to that one. You know, a long tongue just like that, he did, and talking about that one. And what do you think is virtue? He was a horsefly, a gadfly. And that is one of the reasons that he was attacked, or older people didn't like him very much. The philosophers liked him, but he was asking questions makes you think. Thinking is difficult. The whole Romantic movement, don't forget, was against the age of reason. Thinking is difficult, what is necessary is doing, living, the deed. Fascism, and so on. This is elementary, so when everybody makes you think and ask, who are you? What are you? Have you ever thought about that? Who are you, intelligent fellow, to come and bother me with that? I am making my shoes, I am making the food, preparing the food. Leave me alone. So from there came this whole Socratic tradition of the Cynics, who made people think, often in a very rude way. Elementary life is like that. This was the green belt multiplied by 100. You know, and they have to say everybody how life is, and all this nonsense thing of dressing one. Diogenes ran around in a tub, and just like that, he lived in it. And they did the very crudest thing but they had the philosophy behind it from what is culture. And when one of the great cynics was sitting there. And the Emperor Alexander, who had conquered the place where he came, stood there. And he said he admired him because of being so detached. He says, "Can I do something for you?" "Yes, please go a little to the side. You are standing in my sun." So that is the way that one philosophy developed. Then you had the Stoics, very admired and by Sri Aurobindo called the Yoga. The Stoics with the way of everything is destiny. The divine is everything. We are the divine. Destiny is what comes to me. And that is the reason that so easily they committed suicide, the Stoical Greeks and especially Romans, when destiny crossed their path and said, "The emperor wants you to go, wants you to die." They opened their veins in the world and so on. This is an illustration of the philosophy. So the philosophy spread, the religion, everything hang together. Because what I have tried to say last time also is that at that time philosophy still was a mode of living. And this is what it is for us. We have the whole philosophy, more than anybody has ever written, such an incredible literature, but it is a literature to be lived. And if you know the whole thing, you have read everything and you know it by heart, you know, you still are nothing if you have not become. Gnosticism is about becoming. Hermeticism is about becoming. So then, there were the mysteries. And these mysteries have almost been wiped out up to recent times. Now it is coming up again. One of the illustrations is that I am talking about it. But the mysteries are unknown for two reasons. One reason is that it was secret. And this was serious. You had to swear an oath on your life that you would not divulge to others what you had been through, where you were an initiate. Because the mysteries had two kinds of people. They had the interested ones. They had the people who felt attracted and who were said, "Welcome, welcome. And this, what you are doing is very important, but you can only come up to there." And when the rites or the initiation of the initiates took place, you have to stay outside. So there were the spectators, and they were the people who were initiated. And the initiates had to swear an oath on their life that they would not tell others what happened. Sri Aurobindo has written explicitly, this is exactly what happened at that time, because what was it about? Man, the great X. In between the past, evolutionary past, and the evolutionary future, but being an evolutionary being, animal-like, he has in him God, the divine, so he is a God in potentially. And if you tell people that, here you become a God, here you contact the gods, and they said all the mysteries, man is more than a God, as Sri Aurobindo and the mother have said. Because the gods are great in their worlds. They are far above us, of course. But they are fixed in their world. They cannot evolve. To evolve, as Sri Aurobindo and the mother have said that explicitly, they have to descend into the evolution. They have to become human. And then they can go on forward. While man has a soul in himself, I'm very sorry, ladies, here, I am always saying man because I have read so much in Sri Aurobindo and the mother, and their way of writing was still like that. So when I say man, unconsciously, when I speak like that, I mean, of course, the human being. So we have the divine in us, which the gods are, in a way, aspects, powers of the divine. But we are already always that, and if we become what we are, then we are actually more than, because we are the central, original divine. So if you say that to people, what is the result? I'm God. You know, and I can do everything. And this has come here also with the Gnostics, as we will see, as it has been in the Middle Ages, the brethren and sisters of the free spirit, who say, we are God. So, we can do everything. And they even had the thesis, we have to do everything. Because if you have not been fully human, you cannot make a step forward. So then, of course, the first thing was nakedness, the second thing was copulation, the third thing was doing everything and taking from others everything they felt they liked. It is a kind of going exactly against all the philosophies of the mastery of oneself, the yoga, the tapasya, which is necessary to really have that. There is a difference between the imagination and the fact. So the mysteries at that time here, they were spread everywhere. The centers were of course there, Eleusis, Delphi, then there was Demeter, Orpheus, Dionysus, and it is very important to realize that Orpheus, it is very important to realize that Orpheus and Dionysus, as I said last time, came from Egypt, from Osiris and Isis. They are the same, exactly the same, the gods. And the antagonists who attack the ant, kill him, cut him into pieces, spread the pieces over all the known world, and then there is the act of Isis and the great mother everywhere, whatever name she must have had, who takes everything together and brings it back. These pieces are the divine spread into the beings, they are the soul, the spark of God in the human beings. And then, through an act of the mother, they come together again. Once the mother has told to the children a story. And this story fascinated me from the very first time I read it. And now I know why. Because it is the story of the, at the basis, of Gnosticism and so many other searches for God, explanations of the human condition. And she says, at the beginning there was the unity. Within the divine, there were powers, the divine powers, the great powers, Satchitananda, Satchitapas, four great powers, that were so glorious that I say, why should we need to feel one with the others? We are that. And by being, becoming egoistic, they became the opposite. And they became the four asuras, who are in fact the kind of expressing the ignorance, the inconscient, of which the evolution then had to take place. The divine, by way of the four asuras, dived into his opposite, involution, and then the evolution had to take place. And the mother says, she tells that story, she says, please remember that it is a story for children. Then when this had happened, something had gone wrong with the creation of the all beautiful, the all true, and the all good, as the Greeks said. Here in India they would say Satchitananda through the supermind, through the Gyan. This creation had gone bad. And Sri Aurobindo says in a certain place it was not necessary that it became like that. There has been an accident. And this is the word the mother uses, accident. Then she says, in the Gnosis they will say it was Sophia, a word for the Universal Mother, wisdom, consciousness, who made the mistake. And then the mother says, she turns towards the divine and says, see what has happened, what shall I do? And he said, pour your love into this black Asuric creation and everything will become good again. And the mother did that. And this love is the psychic being in all the beings which evolve, which exist. The divine spark is there in everything, even in the atom, but the psychic being only is in man. The psychic being is an evolutionary development. And in fact, it is the psychic being that when everything is ready, when the earth is ready, and when some individuals are ready, it is the psychic being that will take shape externally in a matter that is not our gross matter, this one, in a way that is changing. Matter has to change. And Sri Aurobindo says it is only when matter is ready that the new being can take the material body, because this gross body is not a body for Superman, if you call it like that. It is too gross. It is in fact the expression of our whole inconscient and subconscious. The body is so much connected with the subconscious that, as Mother and Sri Aurobindo have always said, the illnesses come from there. The sufferings of the body, the shaping of the body, everything we have to go through comes from those roots, that foundation. So for another being, okay, matter has to be transformed. And that is something, my dear friends, that is so important, because people speak so easily about what we are now and the Superman. We have to go through a whole process of miracles before that can happen. And we are at the center of the miracle. Because Orville, in its horoscope, you know, is Taurus at the ascendant. Oh, God is gone, I have forgotten this one. So, at the ascendant, it is Taurus. Taurus is matter. And Orville, it has the occult color, orange, which is the color of the sannyas and of the occultism. It has the five leaves, powers, which are a number of action, five. And Mother has said Orville plays an occult action in a role in the world at the moment. She has said that on several occasions. So what is happening is that matter has to change. And then the mother has said at a certain moment, what is going to happen in the future? This great change in which we are fully involved at the moment, everything is hanging by a thread. This great change, Jesus, what is going to happen? What is humanity having to go through? And all the big questions are there. The huge populations in China, in India, everything, the whole finances, everything now is hanging by a thread. And only here can we realize, can we have a look at what is actually taking place. Because one of the greatest typical things for the human psychology is to be sure of tomorrow. Everything. Oh God, here, Mother, Sri Aurobindo, there, everywhere. If only tomorrow is like today. But tomorrow cannot be like today if the world has to change. And the world having to change means that humanity has to change. That humanity has to change from the old dharma of the ego to the new dharma, Sri Aurobindo's term, of the egolessness. Number one. The second point is that if that vision, of course, is correct, and we accept it because we are here, but often it is not much thought about, matter has to change to enable the possibility of that consciousness taking shape. Supermind is Superman, life divine. The formulation for Supermind is Superman. So if this has to come about, such a change has to come, to which we in fact are dedicated. And at this moment, it has been initiated by Sri Aurobindo and the Mother. We are in that transitory period where consciousness can help. I'm far from the mysteries, but I go back to them. These mysteries now spread everywhere. And I got many initiates among the emperors. They went to Eleusis, they went to Delphi, they were initiating this, that, the nobles, the patricians, the governors, everybody, all the big fellows, you know, they were in fact initiates. Cicero himself was initiated in four or five mysteries, because they had their branches over the whole Hellenistic world. And then there were the new ones, the new mysteries, Isis and Mithras, for instance, because there was a dozen, at least more. So, as I said in the beginning, not to make it too abstract because of this little fellow being talking, let me read something about the mysteries of Isis. Cleopatra, the last of the Ptolemaic queens, regarded herself as an incarnation of Isis and appeared in the habiliments of the goddess, as Shakespeare writes. Isis was favored by Roman rulers. Caligula and Otto were her worshippers. Vespasian, who wrought miracles in the name of Serapis, practiced incubation along with Titus in the Roman Iseum. These temples of Isis were spread over the whole Mediterranean, which the Romans called Mare Nostrum, our sea. In Rome, Iseum is temple of Isis. Incubation, strange word, has nothing to see with chicken eggs. It meant that people went to the temple and had to sleep there before getting access to the divinity. In the sleep, in many of Asclepius' temples, people were cured. People were visited. They, in fact, in the sleep, in their subtle bodies, contacted and connected with these gods, which, let's never forget, are powers of the divine. Because Isis is the Virgin Mary. The Virgin Mary is Sophia. Sophia is the great goddess. And why do I dare to say Isis was the Virgin Mary? Because the statues of the Virgin Mary with Christ are exactly the same as Isis with Horus, giving the breast, suckling her son. Exactly the same. And that is one of the reasons that in Europe, in many places, you find the black virgins. Black virgins. There are several in Belgium. One I know of is Halle. Black face with cannonballs, because she has protected Halle, that little town, against attackers. And they say her face has become black because of the smoke of the cannons and of the cannonballs. This is of course great nonsense. Because in Chartres, the famous cathedral, there is the Black Virgin, one of the main points of attraction. And in many other places, where do they come from? Of course she was Isis. Because Isis was supposed to be Egyptian, this means lower realm and Ethiopia. Let's not forget that many of the pharaohs were black, which is the reason that, as I said last week, Martin Bernal wrote about Black Athena. There was an assimilation of cultures. Let me go back. Vespasian, who wrought miracles in the name of Serapis, practiced incubation along with Titus in the Roman Iseum. Later on, in the capital, Domitian, these are all Roman emperors, built another Iseum and the Serapeum. Hadrian, another emperor, adorned his villa with Isaic saints. Commodus, another emperor, took part in the rites of Isis and wore the mask of Anubis. You see, this is what I say are not vain words. This is what happened, and for them it was reality. And then, if I can find the other one. Ah. There in the beginning was Isis, oldest of the old. She was the goddess from whom all becoming arose. She was the great lady, mistress of the two lands of Egypt, mistress of shelter, mistress of heaven, mistress of the house of life, mistress of the word of God. She was the unique. In all her great and wonderful works, she was a wiser magician and more excellent than any other god. And magician, you have to take it in the highest sense, is the power of Maya. It is so, I am jumping from one branch to another, it is so interesting to remember that Savitri, in Savitri, Sri Aurobindo all the time says, our world is just there by divine magic. And science is the mind taking out pieces of process, trying to explain that. It is the divine magic that is everything and supports everything. The word magic must be there 150, if not 300 times in Savitri. But magic is always the making. Making is Maya. Maya is illusion only later, after Shankaracharya. Maya is the goddess of manifestation. And who was she in Egypt? She was Maat. Maya, Maat. The goddess Maat, the one who measures, who makes, by her magic, brings everything about. Now, there was another, for instance, another mystery, and that was the mystery of Mithras. Mithras is often connected with Mitra from the Vedas. Is it so? Maybe, maybe not. But he became the god of the soldiers. And if you have a map and you have the Rhine, the limits of the Roman Empire, you see all these dots where there was a Mithraeum. And once I am in London, as usual, I take that touring bus that makes one tour of the city. 2 hours, I enjoy all the sights. And all at once the guy said, see, we are passing now by the Mithraeum. I look, it is not much bigger than that, you know. They are all very small. There are the foundations of the Mithraeum in London. What was Mithras? He was a kind of a sun god, who apparently kills the bull looking away. Actually, the bull is on the left and he's looking that side. But the knife is not going into him. It makes some blood, and from the blood comes vegetation, everything you can imagine. The bull normally, if I am not mistaken, also in Zen Buddhism, means nature, which you have to master. And the Mithras cult was a kind of Freemasonry, 7 degrees. And you find these degrees everywhere. You find them with what I just said, initiates, non-initiates. You find them in Freemasonry, you find them in the Pauline Gnosticism, where there are 3 kinds of people. The Heulic people, purely material, never interested in anything else. The people who have, what the mother would say, a living soul, who are open to become. And then you have the pneumatic people, who are the realized souls. Everywhere you find these gradations over the whole world. And Mitras, what must it have given to these legionaries to know, first of all, that God was within them? Because that is the foundation. God is in us, and in many cases there was a matter of reincarnation. What a support for somebody who could die tomorrow morning, or maybe even tonight, in a fight with whomever, that is true. And then the grades who went up, the gradations of the initiation, where you were from a friend, welcome to the University of Human Unity, all here together. And then, little by little, you got to know about this, that, and the other. And you got a higher grade, second grade, the raven. And then you got a higher grade, the soldier, coleman. Then you got the higher grade, the lion. And so on, till you became the father. The father was Mitras. Father was Mitras. Mitras is the God. Like in Christ, you know, the man who says, Paul, I am no longer a Christian, I am Christ. And they had this support. That was what they are looking for. Because fundamentally, everything that I am saying about this philosophy, this way of seeing philosophy as a way of life, about these mysteries, fundamentally it is looking for an answer. Who am I? Why is the world as it is? Why am I here in this world as it is? The human condition, the theodicy, the suffering, that is the fundamental questions out of which all religions come. They had this support, these soldiers, and they had this support, these senators and emperors and this and that. With the emperors, of course, it was still something more, because they were already God before they became God. They were proclaimed to be God, starting with Augustus. And these words are very surprising. If you read some of the hymns to Augustus, you think it is Christ they are addressing, or it is Mitras, or it is Orpheus, or Dionysus. Augustus, the greatest who everything, who is at the origin of this and that. So, another factor in this Hellenistic world was Hermetism. I am already past my 3/4 and 5 minutes, I think. Then we have a break and a tea. Very good for you, very good for me. Hermetism. And that, my dear friends, was the greatest. Where did it come from? It came, everything always Alexandria. Alexandria. Because Alexandria was in the middle of three cultures, Egyptian, Eastern Greece. Everything was Alexandria, but this was Greek, don't forget. So, Eastern, because now more and more one begins to realize that behind this whole view, starting with Thales, starting with Pythagoras and all the others, there was the East. In what way, we don't know. But one way is sure, one thing is sure, that is that all the roads were there. Something shown very clearly by Holger Kersten, the author of Christ Lived in India, who has seems it been here recently and talked to Rudy. All these roads were there, the Silk Road from China, Benares, the Khyber Pass, on to there, up to Palmyra, and there, here, the Phoenicians, who were the great merchants. Another way was this one. The Egyptians went everywhere. The Egyptians were very active. They were seafarers. They had their port, Alexandria. They had ports on the Red Sea. They had them everywhere. The Greeks were seafarers, and the biggest seafarers, the most intensive, were the Phoenicians. Up to 850, 700. And now, 2 days ago on TV, I see a documentary about ships from that time, the time we are talking about, around the year 1 minus 1 plus. And These ships were gigantic. Something one never thought was possible. What did these ships transport? They transported marble blocks of 6-7 tons. For what? For building temples here and there where there was no marble or not marble that was nice enough for the temple the donator intended. These ships are tuk-tuk with their sails and their kicks. And these blocks of tons, several tons, were put so nicely together in that ship because they are still there on the bottom. The wood had rotten away, but the blocks are there exactly arranged in the form of that ship. So there is one thing that one always should keep in mind for everything that is to be discovered yet. For everything that science has and will discover, for everything that we are and will become, it will be much different from what we can imagine. Number one. Number two, it will be much more complex than what we can imagine. And number three, it will be so amazing that we always will become ecstatic about it. The future is like that. For instance, much of what I'm going to say about the Gnostics was totally unknown up to 1945. Till I found these jars near Nag Hammadi in Kenya with all these Gnostic texts. Nobody had ever seen it. They were here. Afterwards, I saw one and two or three in libraries. Absolutely. So Hermetism started here. And Hermetism has the whole deep tradition of Egypt. And what is it? We are that, God willing. And what are we becoming? The great king. The great God will be realized. There is the reincarnation. He says, and you can become that. It gives an initiation. It gives a path. Here we would call it is a yoga. Hermetism is great. When was it written down? In the first century? Yes. Plus 100, something like that. And then it was discovered, brought to Florence, 1475. And Marcello Ficino, one of the great Renaissance men, was translating newfound books by Plato. Because this was the time that the Eastern Kingdom was breaking up and all these manuscripts were brought to or bought by people in Florence. All at once, the Hermetic text, the Hermetica. And immediately, the ruler of Florence at that time, Lorenzo, said, stop, Plato, start translating the Hermetica. What is the result? One of the results is Giordano Bruno. Giordano Bruno was fully in Egyptianism. The Renaissance turned fully towards Egyptianism. If you read Francis Yates, one of the greatest historians I know because he died not so long ago, she makes this clear difference in the Renaissance. What is the Renaissance? If I say the word Renaissance, what comes up in your mind? It may be Erasmus. It may be Petrarca. The literary side of the Renaissance, for whom the great hero was Cicero. But the Renaissance, they were magicians. All of them. And they tried to do things with invoking this and that because they had found that in the Hermetica, they had found that in the other. They were magicians for the greatest part, Ficino included. And this is not known because all these things are always swiped away. The whole of Gnosticism was swiped away. The whole of Hermetism was swiped away because there was that institution that said, this is true, this is of the devil. Everything that is of the devil included the incredible library in Alexandria, the Serapeum, 470 and something, burned by Christian monks. Hypatia, this wonderful, exceptional woman at that time, killed by Christian monks. Christian monks going to everywhere and having the joy of destroying temples and that because they were, without knowing what most of them were doing, they were fighting the devil. Everything is always wiped away. And the second point is that all that is paganism. And I have been looking now for a couple of years for another word of pagan, because I don't like it. Christian is okay. Pagan is something low. If everybody can ever give me a nice word to replace paganism, I will surely use when I have to write about these things. Paganism is always pejorative. Pagans who adore the idols. And all the idols became devils. In the West as well as in the East. So Hermetism was very beautiful. It went very close together with Gnosticism. I will have to do that. I just read the last thing and then we stop. Otherwise I have up to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So, to say something again to illustrate, from the Hermetica comes the following. Are you ignorant, Asclepius, that Egypt is the image of heaven? Moreover, it is the dwelling place of heaven and all the forces that are in heaven. If it is proper for us to speak the truth, our land is the temple of the world. And it's proper for you not to be ignorant that a time will come in our land when Egyptians will seem to have served the divinity in vain, and all their activity in their religion will be despised. For all divinity will leave Egypt and will flee upward to heaven. And Egypt will be widowed. It will be abandoned by the gods. For foreigners will come into Egypt and they will rule it. Our Egypt. It's nice to think of that when one sees the pyramid. And the temples. And then another extract, so amazing. Hermes often used to say to me that those who read my books will think that they are very simply and clearly written. Here is the writer of the Hermetica speaking. When in fact, quite on the contrary, they hide the meaning of the words and will become completely obscure when later on the Greeks will want to translate our language into their own, which will bring about a complete distortion and obfuscation of the text. Expressed in the original language, the discourse conveys its meaning clearly. For the very quality of the sounds and the intonation of the Egyptian words contains in itself the force of the things said. Preserve this discourse untranslated, in order that such mysteries may be kept from the Greeks, and that their insolent, insipid, and meretricious manner of speech may not reduce to impotence the dignity and strength of our language, and the cogent force of the words. For all the Greeks have is empty speech, good for showing off, and the philosophy of the Greeks is just noisy talks for these Egyptians. For our part, we use not words, we use sounds full of energy. So you thought that the mantra was only very a joke. I'm sorry, on an American airport I heard the man from the airline say, this has gone through our hands, this has gone through my hands, so we have a cup of tea now.
I'm sorry, but the tea has not kept the diamond. last time it was quite early here, so I put it in a later, so I hope it comes in the next 5 minutes. So I have sent for you.
Then I continue.
You can continue.
Where am I?
Judge, can I ask a question?
No questions, please. No, afterwards. So we have spoken about the eastern side. There was also Zoroastrianism, and this is very important, because Zoroaster and Persia were the origin of the duality of the manifestation of the worlds. Duality means one part was divine, the other part is the dark side. And it is very nice to see now, if we put all that together, all that together, what world views I have touched upon more or less. First, the Greek one was like that, circular, cycles. There was no beginning of history, there was no end, it was just going. And Nietzsche has picked that up in the literal sense and says, now I am living in a cycle and I will come back and go exactly through the same. He had this as a revelation at Silva Plana in the Alps. Then you have the Gnostic faith, which says there is one divine, and this divine was the transcendent divine. Don't think that all these people were just heathens and only know gods and all that. This was the divine, the ineffable, which they called the Father. And then there were the cycles around the worlds, seven, according to the seven planets, and the whole consisted of that, boom, black, 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 black. This is the story which the mother told, you know, from here, through an accident, this was created by the demiurge, and this demiurge was ignorant, the mother said, the four asuras, and all these things he has done are bad. By an accident, parts of these came here in, and they are the souls lost, going through life after life, often compared to prostitutes, because they have to live in the body, and they have to live with the world, they have to live with the dark forces. They are spread everywhere. They have forgotten where they come from. And what has to happen? Something has to descend. Savior, whatever you rename him, and remind the people who they are, where they come from, what they are. And by reminding, by knowing, this is Greek for gnosis. Gnosis means knowledge. By knowing, they recover, they cultivate their soul, and they can go back. But it is a split world. This is bad forever. This gnosis is not pure knowledge, what we understand by intellect and such things. It's an insight. And Plato will say, like Sri Aurobindo, that these memories are in our soul, that we do not discover knowledge, we remember what we knew before we came. Sri Aurobindo says it very clearly in his writings on education, because he knew like Plato well. Then you have another way of seeing. You have the way of involution and evolution. Then you have another way of seeing, and this is the way of the Hermetica, everything is one. Just in a kind, evolution was not known at that time, but everything is one, because the famous saying of the Hermetica, the most well known, is as above, so below. Like there is here, like here is there. Now, you have these kinds of worldviews, and they are so immensely important, because man becomes as he sees himself. And if you live in a condition from everything turns around, there is no reasonable effort to do better. If you live in a condition like here, you leave the world behind. And that, of course, do you realize that most of the life divine, much of the life divine, is written against Buddhism and illusionism? Because the Aurobindo had to establish his new view, which is an evolutionary view, and which was totally foreign to the way of thinking then. For us now it's normal, but then it was totally foreign. So, he had to fight this Buddhist and Shankara illusionism view with rational arguments to present his new thesis, going from there to there, which is of course going from there to there in the cycle of evolution, evolution. But the way one sees oneself is so important. And don't forget that this historical view originated with the Jews. The Greeks had cycles. The Jews had history. They had started there and they would go up to the day that the Messiah would unify the whole world with the Lord, the Jewish God, and then could the end of the world come. So these are all different views about things we have been talking in the backgrounds, and they are so important because they will condition your effort to what you are becoming. See? So then, Gnosticism, what is Gnosticism? Well, it is already much of what I have said about Hermeticism, and I will read it in a very condensed form. For Gnosticism, number one, there is a transcendent, ineffable God. This may come as a surprise to many who are interested in these things, because normal in ancient times there was only that kind of gods and the Jewish God. The one God which is the transcendent, ineffable, cannot be named. The second point is, there were the fears of constitution, which are in fact the whole manifestation is one. And the whole manifestation consists of layers. What does that remind of? This is the chain of being. If you read Wilbur, you will read all the time about the chain of being. And the life divine is based on the same view of the tea has not yet gone. on the same view of the planes of being, the chain of being. So the plenum, if you read that wonderful book by Arthur Lovejoy about these levels of existence, you know, this is, everything is in that. But there are gradations coming from the one down to the lowest, which is the matter in which we are living. Everything has gradation. So, this is number two. Gnosticism first, the transcendent God. Second one, the spheres, the planes of being constituting the manifestation. The third one is the world created by a demiurge. Demiurge. What is that? The ending phrase. What am I doing? Yes. This is the one who makes. He is the man who made the worlds in his ignorance. Because of a mistake of the Sophia, the great mother who allowed that. Don't forget that the mother also said about the Asuras, but they are my sons also. The Lord of falsehood, he's my son. And sometimes we have conversations together. If one goes into that, how deep is that? The Lord of falsehood, the Asuras, did no to God, who either has to be destroyed or taken up into their origin, no conversion is possible. How deep is that going? How deep is it going that when I discovered that Albert Speer, who was the minister of Hitler, who had 12 million foreign slaves under him, had a near-death experience, which he has confided into to Gita Serena. He had not written in his memoirs because he says, if I write that, they will think that I am like that. He had a near-death experience. He was in the hospital. One of his enemies was Himmler. This hospital was run by the SS. They had the order to eliminate him. And when he was on the operation table, he went out of his body. And he saw his wife there, and he saw the nurses and the doctors, and he says it was just like a ballet. And I felt so peaceful. And then all at once, I had to come back. Since then, he says, I never have fear of death. Albert Speer sent back to make the war last that longer through his, he was a genius of organization. How do you interpret that? I hope to speak about that next week. Because you see, you have the romantic yoga, but you have the integral yoga. And the integral yoga has to do with harsh reality. So you have this way of the mother saying that they were also my children. Demiurge was also her child. Sophia is the mother universal. The other point is...
What?
One minute. The divine manifestation divided into good and evil. Evil. For the Gnosis, they were great mystics. But it was escape. And here you have against the Aurobindo life, divine and the mother. Against escape. Escape is a matter of egoism. When you realize your soul, in that perspective, it is so important to have a mental background behind the realization which will direct your realization. In that perspective, then you are working for the whole world. The mother says we are doing our yoga not for ourselves, but for the whole world. And mother, you always find, when I say mother, you find all the quotations in Sri Aurobindo. When you say Sri Aurobindo, you find them in the mother. Then divine elements or sparks, by accident, fallen into the evil material sphere. We, here we are sitting. Recovering the fallen state only through remembering the knowledge. Remembering. Our soul feel attracted. We come to what is for us, as the mother said of herself, if I appreciate Sri Aurobindo, it is because I have studied a little, and what I found in him, I found the most attractive way for me to direct my life and to explain the world and myself. Then this recovery can only be brought about by an avatar, a savior. Now I have been premature and used the word avatar, savior. Somebody who comes from here, who is part of that, who is that? And who comes and says, hey fellows, where are you? Wake up! Don't be drunk anymore, become sober. And see what I am, do what I am, and at last you will come out of the body. Soma sema, the body is a grave. Later, you will come out of this world of suffering and doing, you leave it behind and you follow in my trail of light and become what you are again. Now we are there for the tea and then I will go on and